Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Living Arts of Tulsa's latest exhibit is featuring the ephemeral art created back in June when President Trump resumed live campaigning with an event in Tulsa on Juneteenth weekend. Coming on the heels of protests over George Floyd, the city prepared for an influx of up to a purported 500,000 visitors. Luckily, that was a substantial overestimation. But downtown businesses boarded up their windows and doors in anticipation of conflicts between attendees and counter-demonstrators. The Downtown Coordinating Council put out a call to artists to showcase the city's core values through created artwork on the plywood covering doors and windows. And artists did come out. Normally, those boards would be discarded after the event and crisis, but in this case, they weren't. And in light of the events of the past 6 months, they remain as relevant today as the day they were created. Tulsa Black Moon Collective member artist Tina Henley and board member at Living Arts was asked to curate an exhibit of these artworks. The result is Project Hope, Unity, and Compassion. It opened last weekend and continues through January 23rd. And she's my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Tina Henley, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Why don't you start at the beginning? Tell us the story of this artwork at the exhibit at Living Arts.
So I am on the Living Arts board currently, and I was notified about an upcoming exhibit for January last year, and I was informed that Living Arts will be receiving a bunch of plywood boards from when the Trump rally was taking place. And when I saw that information or when that was presented to me, I was thinking, boards from the Trump rally, like, what? What does that mean? And then I remembered, I was like, oh, from the Trump rally. And I went back to where that was taking place, and that was back in June of last year, where a bunch of downtown businesses had their storefronts boarded up, and that there was a call for artists. This was a last minute call to come and paint messages, words of affirmation, encouragement on these boards. And it was a really crazy weekend, and I automatically like flashed back and remembered, because it was Juneteenth weekend. So, you know, put that into context. So once I remembered, okay, it's from that moment in Tulsa, you know, where it was a really intense time, I was like, oh, okay. So Living Arts was going to receive the plywood boards, and they asked me to curate the show. And so once I got the information, I went up to Living Arts and started basically planning out where I wanted some of the plywood boards in the space. But that's
how the exhibit came about. But I'd like to take it back, if I could, to just, were you actually involved in the project of painting these? Basically, they were plywood to go over windows and door frames during the rally, because everybody was, you know, this comes, you know, just a few weeks after George Floyd and some of the largest nonviolent protests in Tulsa's history. You had, everybody was still on edge from that. It's Juneteenth weekend. The president is coming to resume live rallies in Tulsa. They're talking about a crowd of 500,000 or more coming to Tulsa. People mm-hmm. were on edge. Were you involved in the project of actually helping these storefronts paint these murals, basically, on their front to basically protect their businesses during the weekend when large protests were expected?
So I was not one of the, I did not participate in the painting of the plywood boards. What's crazy is I was actually painting a Black Lives Matter mural with Black Moon Tulsa, with the collective.
Right.
So that was off of First Street in Cheyenne downtown, I believe. I could be wrong. But where we were, there was a lot of traffic because of all of the people who were attending the rally and also attending Juneteenth celebrations. So we were painting a Black Lives Matter mural. It was, you know, you could just feel the tension. And we actually had people who were stand-ins to let law enforcement know, because law enforcement was everywhere, making sure that we were allowed to continue on painting that mural.
Yeah. Now, the Downtown Coordinating Council basically decided this was an opportunity to showcase our core values. So I guess artists came together. How many artists altogether? Because I understand it was quite a number. More than 300 artists responded. Now, was this all of the plywood coverings, or is this a curated selection of them?
So they had a response of over 300, but actually there were more than about a dozen people who responded, and there were artists, but also just non-artists too, who responded to the call. So the response was large, but the actual execution was made by a little more than a dozen people. So we received most of them. Some of them actually weren't included in the show, and I don't know why, but so it wasn't as many as the response was as far as people who actually painted murals.
Well, I guess, you know, what's really amazing, these came together over the course of about 48 hours or something like that. And some of them are really amazing. I mean, you know, and some are, you know, there's some inspired by graffiti. Others are just putting out a message by untrained artists, obviously. But, but really some of them are amazing for coming together in 48 hours. And of course, you know, in a project like this, you think, okay, this is basically a way of projecting a message from the city to people coming to the city for Juneteenth or for the Trump rally, and putting up sort of a theme of what our core values stand for, which most of these messages are absolutely about hope, unity, compassion, inclusion. And it's perhaps ephemeral. Once the rally is over, you know, the people leave, the plywood comes down, you would expect a lot of these pieces to be discarded. Why do you suppose they weren't?
I think because of the value in the community coming out as far as local creatives and Tulsans answering the call and the messages that were painted. So I think the main focus, like, there was an importance of the people who created these murals, but also the messages that were portrayed. And like you were saying, the execution of these plywood boards, as far as the murals, it's amazing. I mean, the colors that were used, the words that are used, the messages behind them, just the craftsmanship as far as like the colors that were used. So I just think there was a value not only to the actual art itself, but who was behind the art. The actual people who created these also resonated with preserving and keeping these boards and making sure that they were going to be showcased in a way that reminded the viewer that, you know, just like these people came out and demonstrated compassion through art, you know, you can too. So I think there's just a really neat message that's behind what was actually painted. So it just has a really important value. Yeah, that's what I think.
Now, one of your tasks as the curator for Project Hope, Unity, and Compassion, which opened last week at Living Arts, was to, in some cases, track down the artist, because I think there's some that you don't know who the artist was. It's unknown at this particular point. Mm-hmm. And then getting statements from them, what they were trying to accomplish. I imagine that was a bit difficult given the ephemeral nature of this whole project of going up last minute, putting them up, and then, you know, they disperse after the weekend. Tell me about that process.
Actually, because this happened back in June of last year, so the boards were taken down by the Downtown Coordinating Council, the City of Tulsa. So I actually had no idea who the artists were until I was curating the exhibit at Living Arts this month. So what I did was, and there were no names associated with the boards when I was curating the event. So I actually looked back because of the information that Living Arts provided me, and they finally were able to get names and things of that nature. And so once I found out who the artists were, I just took it upon myself to go look at their Instagram pages to find out who they were and who they are. And actually, a few of them I already knew personally once I found out. And some of the boards that were used, the artistic style was obvious to me who the artist was. So it was easy to be like, oh, this is a mural painted by Antonio Andrews of No Parking Studios, or this plywood board, I know this person in their style. This is Christy Hurd Bunch, and I know what type of art she creates. But then there were some unknowns because there were multiple people, like the Typros Foundation. They're not an arts group. They're Tulsa Young Professionals. But there were different members of Typros who I've met before. So it was a little bit intimidating at first because I was like, oh, no, I don't have all the names. But then once I got them and I was able to do some more research, it put a face and, you know, a person to the mural. And it was like, oh, this is so cool. And this is neat that now I get to know exactly who was behind painting this mural.
Of course, some of them are still unknown. At least they were unknown at the beginning of this exhibit.
Right. Yes. So, yeah. And that there's one mural that's a beautiful, it has a quote on it from Alice Walker. And it's the way that it's painted. It has all of these fists in the mural, but the way that it's executed, it looks like an eye, like a human eye.
Yes.
And there's a really powerful quote on it and about love trumping hate and the power of the people. And it's just really neat. And it's like, we don't know who painted this, but you want to show it because it's just so powerful. And then there's another one, and it features a black woman with an afro, and she has all of these beautiful words in cursive, you know, painted in her hair, and it looks like she's praying. And we don't know who was the artist behind that.
She's actually praying, and it says kindness, equality, strength, hope, love. And I do have the quote from Alice Walker here. It says, the most common way people give up their power is by thinking they don't have any. And it's written along, I guess you would call it, the border of the eyelid, along the top and along the bottom. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it is a very striking mural. And again, you don't know who did this.
No.
My guest today is Tina Henley. She is curator for the exhibit Project Hope, Unity, and Compassion, which opened last week at Living Arts and runs through January 23rd. It is an exhibit featuring art that was ephemerally created the weekend prior to Juneteenth weekend this past year when the Trump rally took place. And, of course, Juneteenth celebrations came in. And it's basically plywood boards that were pushed over windows and doors in the downtown area by various businesses. And the Downtown Tulsa Coordinating Council helped commission artists to put messages of inclusion and of peaceful thoughts and core values of the city on these artworks. And they're actually being sold in a silent auction. And you can see the exhibit either online at livingarts.org or in person through January 23rd. My guest, Tina Henley, who is the curator for the exhibit and a Black Moon Collective member artist. She's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Let's talk about some of the pieces in the show. One of the most striking is done by a group. Is it called Clean Hands?
Yes, yeah. I was told that they were able to put up their mural in about 45 minutes.
Wow.
Their methodology behind it, it's like down to a science because they've been doing street art for so long. And it's like 27 feet long, and it has a woman laying down, and it's done in a graphic novel style, or that's the best way I can put it. And the woman is reading a book, and it has a peace symbol on it, and the colors that are throughout the whole piece are watercolor, kind of psychedelic pastels. It's a really bright and light piece, but it's larger than life, and I really enjoy it. It's like a modern take on like a classic form, so I really liked that piece.
Another one you mentioned earlier, you said you knew their style immediately, was Cody Edwards and Caitlin Eversole, and this is a beautiful piece too called Love Above All.
Yeah, that piece just the way that there's movement in it, and then there's the graphic bold, the love, and it's actually like overall.
Yeah.
It's just a really cool piece that it's just very graphic and bold. And then there's like a heart with a peace symbol in it. And I love the colors that they use. It reminds me of almost like the sun, like a radiating style that they chose to, as far as their painting and strokes.
Now you mentioned another one you saw earlier that you recognized the style was No Parking Studios, Live and Let Live, which is sort of kind of strikes me as Basquiat-esque because it has that sort of 70s, 80s graffiti everywhere. And it's basically a series of messages that say, live and let live, you know, various messages, but really has some of that stylized imagery in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. By Antonio Andrews. There are actually faces behind a lot of the words. And there are just phrases that to me are really catchy and sound true to him, which is one of the phrases is having things. And, you know, I just thought that was really cool how he infused his personality and his style, but also, you know, portrayed the message of love and living and life. And he also put in the piece like our city, like, you know, as far as ownership, that it's you know, we all have a part in the Tulsa community.
Is there any piece that's the biggest mystery to you?
Actually, there is. There's an unknown piece. Like the location is unknown. The title is unknown. Artist unknown. And it's everything's unknown. And it's a graffiti piece. And it has like a crown on it. I can't even make out what it actually says. But and I hate to try to describe it like this way, but everything about it is unknown. But I really like the energy and the simplicity of it, because all they used was black spray paint and that's it.
Yeah.
But the way that they, the strokes that they used and the spraying, I really liked. So.
Now, when I was first heard about this project, I thought that a lot of it would be political in nature, and very little of it is actually overtly political. It's mainly about, you know, let's peacefully gather, let's peacefully demonstrate, let's oppose hate, but other than that, not so overtly political. A few of them are. One that was sort of, again, in a sort of more of a graffiti style is the one called Dickie Rowland Lives, which, of course, again, this rally took place just a few weeks after the 99th commemoration of the Tulsa Race Massacre. You would expect messages like this.
Right, yeah. And I would guess that maybe some of the artists were exhausted politically because of the atmosphere and everything that was going on. I think maybe sticking with an overall, like you were saying, core value and belief rang more true for them, something to hold on to rather than trying to point the finger or even choose a side. Not that they don't individually themselves, but maybe with this call to artists, it really drove home, you know, what should we stand for? What should we actually believe in? And what is interesting about the Dickie Rowland Lives piece is it's still in a positive light. And
yeah,
it's referencing a horrible and awful time in Tulsa's history that has not, in my opinion, been completely I don't even want to say reconciled, but made right. And to say, you know, that's, you know, Dickie Rowland Lives, it's almost like a positive. It could also mean like, you know, are they referring to that the time that Dick Rowland was living?
Yeah.
Maybe it's pointing to the negative aspects from so it's just, I'm glad that also was showcased in this show. So
I almost thought of it as an admonition that we still have lots of work to do.
Mm-hmm.
What will the artwork being sold, who does it benefit? Tell us about this silent auction and also some of the prints of these pieces actually being shown as they were on the downtown buildings.
Yeah, so the silent auction, I believe it's live now, and then it closes on the 24th, and I believe that's a Sunday. And what will happen is Living Arts will set up an appointment times for individuals who, with the highest bid, to pick up their plywood pieces. So that's as much as I know. But then there are prints that are framed that...
just in case you don't want a 17-foot long plywood.
Right. you can purchase a print that is framed and matted. And for those, I believe those were the Downtown Coordinating Council had photographers go out and take photographs and of the piece. So you can actually have a print of where the mural actually was, the original location. And so for those, oh, it looks like that the price, they're about $100 each. Yeah. So, but yeah, that's as much information I know about the auction and the actual photograph print.
Again, Living Arts open by appointment and a few times a day, but you can also look at the artwork at livingarts.org. Tina, this must have been an interesting project, perhaps one of the more interesting projects you've worked on as an artist and curator. What was the experience like?
It was shocking.
Shocking?
Because this is my first curatorial project, and so I was asked, and I didn't have a lot of information to go off of, because I think that Living Arts was still receiving information as well. So I appreciate that they trusted me to actually do this, but it was so enjoyable once I was able to get into the gallery space and look at the boards. Now, moving the boards was really hard. I'm not going to lie. That was pretty tough because they were huge and heavy. And then it was like putting a puzzle together because, you know, they were as organized as best as possible, but we still had to like lay them out. But once I realized the context and was brought back to that time where this was actually happening, it really made it real for me, like what the artists might have been going through themselves as far as painting these murals, what the city was trying to do in terms of relaying a message of hopefulness and positivity. And so it just made it that more real to me. And I just was like, man, the timing also for this month, you know, with everything that's happening in our nation right now in Washington, D.C. So it was like a culmination of all just different elements and timing. And I thought that was a really neat experience to have.
It does seem like June last year was an awful long time ago.
Yeah.
it's some really interesting work. And I'm glad, you know, so often things like this happen. The plywood is discarded, thrown away, and that's the end of it. I'm so glad that people are going to have a chance to actually look at these pieces if they so desire.
Right. Yeah. I think it's important because it's a different aspect of creativity and art that can go unnoticed or underappreciated, because in my mind, it's like graffiti, street art, even if the execution is more refined. So I think that that's really cool and opens up like a conversation and dialogue of the importance of public art. And I think that it's a unique exhibition, and I'm glad to have been a part of it.
Yeah, this type of art can be so ephemeral at times, and it's good to at least take a look back at it. It may not last 50 or 100 years, but, you know, even 6 months later, it still has a resonance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tina, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks so much. Project Hope, Unity and Compassion is available to be viewed at Living Arts through January 23rd.
Thank you so much.
Black Moon Collective member artist and curator for the exhibit Project Hope, Unity, and Compassion, Tina Henley, speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. The exhibit opened last week at Living Arts and runs through January 23rd. Information on gallery hours, and you can view the exhibit online at livingarts.org. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Well, infections for COVID-19 and deaths, unfortunately, continue to rise in Tulsa and around the country. Here's the comments of Connie Cronley.
We may be locked down, working from home, even quarantined, but that doesn't mean we've lost our fashion conscience. The trending compliment is, love your mask. The first time I heard that was from a grocery store cashier. I was wearing my handsome public radio NPR mask, which, self-praise here, I got as a donor to public radio. Of course I wear a mask. When I have to go out for necessary errands or to a medical appointment, or when a workman is coming to my home to repair whatever's broken this week, and don't get me started on home repairs, I wear a mask. For the same reason, I wear a seatbelt in the car, and if I were to ride a motorcycle or bicycle, I'd wear a helmet. Not because laws require it, but for the same reason I look both ways before crossing a street, and why I don't drop in alone at an isolated, rough-looking biker bar about midnight for a nightcap. More than prudence, common sense. Mostly, I stay home. So I was interested in an article about the most effective way to dress for working from home. I learned the term enclothed cognition. It means that the clothes we wear send signals to our brain. If we dress more businesslike when we work from home, we will perform more professionally than if we're wearing sweatpants and, say, a Mickey Mouse t-shirt. Wearing a mask sends a signal to other people and, like enclothed cognition, tells my brain for me to be mindfully careful. We don't often get to wear our best shoes or dressy clothes these days, but the human animal has enormous capacity for self-adornment. So we have cloth masks, and we can match them to our outfits or to the season. Gingham and floral seem a little summery right now. Call me fussy if you will. I don't want to wear a mask that looks like a cat's muzzle or a pig's snout. Top retailers like Urban Outfitters and Nordstrom donate portions of mask sales to charity. And I saw a luxury mask with a detachable gold chain for special occasions. Who knew? Protective face masks as a fashion statement. Until I expand my mask wardrobe, I'll wear my tasteful black mask with the NPR logo. Public radio and a mask. Prudent and smart for all the world to see.
Connie Cronley is a local writer and a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS, its licensee, the University of Tulsa. Be safe, mask up, and thank you for listening to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher.